and welcome to Inbound Raleigh, a podcast about transportation in the city of Oaks. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm James. Today we've got a fun episode for your holiday break time, or at least the time we're taking a holiday break, so maybe we're just being a little lazy.
Yeah, that could be it. Or maybe we thought it'd be fun to answer a variety of transit questions.
Probably the lazy thing, though, I'm thinking, for us.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But, you know, this isn't a paying gig. So, anyway, we asked you, we asked you on social media to share your transit questions with us, and then we went out to find those answers. And so that's what we're going to go over today.
Okay, so first up is a question from Pierre. He wrote, quote, "A lot of the cities that are traditionally known for bike, pedestrian, walkability, transit are in cooler climates, probably the exception of Austin and Texas and a few others. So how big of a factor is the weather, heat, humidity, and the amount of people who choose not to drive? And if it is a factor, what strategies are being implemented in Raleigh to combat this barrier?" So for that answer, we actually have a couple of responses. Trung Vo, who is coordinating the city's bike share program, said the city is not employing any strategies that relate directly to the heat we all suffer here. He says, and I quote, "I will say that the electric assist bike share bikes will certainly reduce the level of effort you'll need to exert riding up Raleigh's hills. Safe and comfortable bikeways also reduce how hard bicyclists have to work, since they would reduce the stress of fast-moving motor vehicle traffic," end quote. I know that having that electric assist would make them a lot more appealing for me, so that's good to hear. We also got an answer to this from Sarah Worth O'Brien, who is the Bicycle and Pedestrian Program Manager for the Institute for Transportation Research and Education at NC State. That is quite the title. So here is Sarah's take on our weather. She said, and I quote, "Weather can be a factor in one's decision to walk or bike, but you are right to point out that other places in the country with warmer or cooler climates are known to have higher active transportation. I think much of this can be attributed to a different culture, places that are more accepting of walking and cycling, and in fact, cities that encourage active modes that see activity happening year-round. But it's all relative. Even in Minneapolis or Portland, weather impacts the volume of cyclists that may be out and about. It's just more obvious in places with newer active transportation cultures where variability in the volume of people engaging in these activities is higher. So cycle counts in a place like Raleigh are more sensitive to changes in weather. And the data we see from monitoring walking and cycling activity across several count stations in Greensboro, Winston-Salem, Durham, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Brevard, we see a general trend of lower active travel in the months where temperatures range from 30 to 50 degrees, as well as slight dips in volume during extremely hot months where the high averaged around 90 degrees. We still see cycling and walking occurring even on days colder or warmer than these bounds, but the sweet spot of activity appears to be when the temperature is at least 50 degrees. She goes on to say that, quote, "Being able to choose active transportation modes in any kind of weather is mostly about having the right clothes to be prepared to walk or cycle in any kind of weather. It's also about having a culture that supports these activities, like employment centers that provide changing rooms and places to shower. While Raleigh doesn't get a lot of snow, winter walking and cycling in other parts of North Carolina can be impacted by clearing sidewalks and bike lanes of snow, just as you would for motor vehicle lanes. Ultimately, it's about changing the mindset of a community to be more accepting of these modes, no matter what the weather is outside, by following the rules of the road, being considerate to other people sharing the street with you, and recognizing that for some people, they have no choice but to walk or bike to get where they need to be, no matter the weather." And actually, last night, kind of late, I was on Glenwood South, which is a madhouse at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I saw two cyclists just blowing through the street, going through intersections, and there's cars turning every which way, pedestrians, and I would be surprised if they made it home safe. It looked very dangerous.
Oh, well, maybe.
And it was like 30 degrees out, so good for them, I guess.
You know, I don't mind riding in the cold. I would rather ride in the cold than hot.
Yeah.
And I think Sarah makes some really good points about it's a culture thing and an attitude, and, you know, being prepared to deal with it is the key. And that's just something that we're going to have to get used to, those of us who don't have to ride a bike or walk. You know, you need extra shoes, you need to change your clothes, right. You might need a washcloth when you arrive at your destination to clean up a little bit.
Yeah, and I definitely am with you, and I'd rather be outside in the cold weather than the hot, because you can always put on more layers and sort of warm up, but if you're sweating and when you get into work and you don't have those things, if you don't have a shower or something, your whole day is going to be miserable, and you can never feel cooler. You can always get warmer easier. Yeah.
Well, on to our next question, which also comes from Pierre. His second question is, quote, "I'm not a fan of the hub-and-spoke Go Raleigh system that we have now. Are there more plans for crosstown routes in the new Wake County Transit plan that don't involve transferring at Moore Square? With implementation of frequent routes network under the Wake County Transit plan, will routes mostly stay the same, or will an entirely new system of routes be developed?" So our answer for that one comes from Juan Carlos Erickson at Go Triangle, and he told us that the Wake Transit plan creates a network of frequent routes, and that provide Main Street and crosstown services into downtown Raleigh. The plan will expand service running every 15 minutes from 17 miles to today to 83 miles by 2027. Hmm. So currently, our technical staff, he says, is meeting biweekly to develop the 10-year implementation plan that will define each year's service improvements, basically saying we're meeting and every year we're going to have some service improvements. We're figuring out which ones are when. They're going to present that plan to the public in the spring of 2018, and that'll illustrate how the new services will be integrated with the current bus routes, when the new services will be seen on the ground, and what additional 30-minute and 60-minute routes will be provided. So all in all, it sounds like the answer is a mix of the options, and we're going to hear more about this next spring. People who are familiar with transit systems know that hub-and-spoke versus crosstown routes is a frequent debate, and I'm not sure exactly how cities choose one or the other or a combination, but certainly this is something we'll get into more next year as we look at it here in Raleigh.
Yeah, and that's a term I wasn't really familiar with until we started doing this podcast. But it is an interesting debate, and I am curious to see how that meeting in the spring goes, which is coming up pretty soon. It's weird to think, but it is spring of 18 is the next season. So, another bus question, sort of related to that one, one of our listeners asked, said, "I noticed a lot of the frequent bus network in the Wake County Transit Plan focused around the ITB Raleigh area. What about North Raleigh? Will a frequent bus network eventually be developed there as well?" Well, Juan at Go Triangle also answered that one. He said that the Wake Transit Plan outlines transit services for the next 10 years. As we approach the completion of that plan, we will be developing a vision for transit services for beyond 2027. Frequent services to areas that do not have it today will be considered as part of that process, including North Raleigh. So it sounds like if North Raleigh does get a system like that, it won't be for quite some time.
Right. I think right now they were looking at where the most need is.
Yeah, and that's certainly is within the Beltline, higher density population, more people.
Right. But, I mean, that's bound to change with all this growth we're having. So,
right.
Next up, we've got a car question. The question is, when making decisions about roads, how do you manage the seemingly competing idea that new roads and lanes reduce congestion in the short term, but also have the potential of increasing new traffic through development in the long term, which will then cause similar problems in the future? Mm. And Raleigh's transportation planning manager, Eric Lamb, answered this and said, quote, "One of the perennial questions in our field is, does transportation follow land use, or does land use follow transportation?" Mm. And he said the ideal answer is that both work hand in hand in a complementary fashion. He also said, quote, "But the reality of high-growth community like ours is that we typically don't look to widen a street until the growth of traffic and development generates the need. Translated, we're not proactively widening streets, we are reactively widening streets once the demand is evident. We are always playing catch-up to the growth." He continues to say, "People have asked us about the phenomenon of induced demand. This issue isn't about growth, but it's about people changing their behaviors based on available system capacity or lack thereof. So the theory is, once you create additional capacity in the network, people will change their behaviors and select that route, as opposed to not picking that route. They will pick a route at a different time of day, pick a different mode, or not making the trip at all." Hmm. Raleigh has a comprehensive plan that balances the future system needs against the future urban form of the city. Our plan prescribes the footprint for each major streets, 2 lanes, 3 lanes, 4 lanes, 6 lanes, etc., based on the planned future growth of the city. And there are numerous cases throughout the city where wider streets have not automatically led to higher volumes over time. Capitol Boulevard is probably the best example of this inside the Beltline, as the highest traffic volumes in the corridor there were in the early 1970s. That's remarkable when you look at the amount of growth DTR in that since that period of time, he says.
Yeah, that's surprising, but it's pretty interesting. And I like that he mentions the perennial questions for transportation, sort of like the hub and spoke discussion. We should definitely dig into those a bit next year on our show, that sort of chicken and egg aspect, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's what I told Eric. And also, if you're curious about induced demand, I'll link to something in the show notes that he sent me. These discussions are really important for Raleigh because it is all about the growth and how are we going to keep people moving throughout our city. And you and I have talked a lot about specific topics so far on the show, so I'm thinking next year we could do a little bit more of some transportation theory. Might be fun.
Yeah, and we can't have a Q&A without putting at least one train question in.
That's right. Trains are my favorite.
So one listener wants to know, what's the status of high-speed rail in North Carolina? Someone had asked this forever ago, early last year, and I think this one is probably worth its own episode. We did speak to Paul Worley at the NCDOT about this briefly right before he retired this past spring. But we think we should break down for all listeners the high-speed rail plan and what's happening. So we'll work on that for sometime early next year.
Yeah. And finally, last question of the day. One of our listeners asked, when's the next reader-listener meetup? So for those of you who missed it, including James, we had a really impromptu beer meetup a few months ago. And this was a co-meetup with local bloggers, Leo Suarez and Jed Byrne. Full disclosure, Leo's my husband. He writes The Raleigh Connoisseur, a blog about downtown Raleigh. And you can find that at dtraleigh.com. Shameless plug. Jed writes a newsletter, and that's called Oak City CRE, meaning commercial real estate. And that focuses a lot on the developments downtown. And anyway, the three of us got together and did this. And yes, we are going to have another meetup, and we might draw another blogger or two into that event.
Ooh.
We are thinking late January or early February, so stay tuned.
And hopefully I'll get invited this time.
Yeah, well, you were out of town yet again.
So that's it for our show today. If you have any questions about transit or transportation in Raleigh or in general, feel free to send them our way. They might be part of a future episode about that topic or another roundup episode sometime next year. And we're also hoping to make some changes in 2018 to make this podcast even better. I know, it sounds impossible, but we do welcome your suggestions and even some volunteer help if you're interested. Reach out to us at inboundraleigh@gmail.com or on social media.
And thank you, listeners, for our first fantastic year. This is our last episode of 2017. We hope you have a wonderful 2018, and we'll catch you next time.